In just about 4 hours, we should have the draft of the Senate's health care overhaul. From Marketplace in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. Senate lawmakers have been keeping their health care plans secret until now, but they're expected to release the text of the bill this morning with a Congressional Budget Office score of the costs of this to follow within days. We haven't seen the bill yet, but some pieces are leaking out today. Marketplace's health reporter Dan Gorenstein at our health desk at WHYY has his ear to the ground. Dan, what is the latest?
Well, so what we understand from reports, much like the House plan, the Senate version would give states the option to drop certain requirements set up under Obamacare. Right now, insurers must sell plans that cover benefits like prescription drugs, hospitalization, maternity care, and services for mental health and addiction. Under the Senate bill, David, states would have the option of stripping out some of that. That means they could choose, you know, to lose birth control or mental health services or whatever coverage they don't like. The question is, how low will states go? What people worry about is what happens if the coverage gets so skimpy it's really no coverage at all. That's a scary proposition for millions of people with pre-existing conditions, not to mention the people who just happen to get sick.
Now, Dan, I know there were a lot of changes to the Medicaid program, the program for low-income people and disabled people in the House version of the bill. How would the program change, do we think, under this Senate proposal?
Right. Well, basically, it's the same deal here, David. Although the Senate bill does make deeper cuts than the House plan, you know, potentially as much as $1 trillion. And right now, Medicaid serves about 75 million people. That is primarily low-income Americans, people with disabilities, seniors who've exhausted their retirement savings are now in nursing homes, and children. If this change happens, states are going to have a really hard time making up the difference. They're not going to have a lot of options. They can cut the rates that they pay doctors and hospitals. They can cut eligibility for people so there are fewer people, or they could cut services. Really, David, this is a historic and radical change to the program that could end up hurting millions and millions of people.
All right. Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein from our health desk at WHYY in Philadelphia. Thanks for this. Let's do the numbers now. The 100-share index in London is down 0.4%, but the DAX in Germany is up slightly. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are all down slightly, with the Dow future down about 11 points. The benchmark for U.S. interest rates, the 10-year yield, is down at 2.15% at the moment. Also due later today, the Federal Reserve's stress tests. Today, results for the banking system as a whole. Next week, pass-fail grades for individual banks. Hi, David Brancaccio, stepping out of my anchorman role for a second. It is the final week of fundraising before our books close for the year. We're asking you to step up and help support us today so that we can continue the in-depth, independent economic coverage and innovation coverage and business coverage that you rely on. Any amount, even a small donation each month, really does count. We appreciate your support. Give today at marketplace.org/donate. I'd like you to hear a conversation I recorded this week with a reporter who has been crisscrossing America for the last 2 years, covering crucial topics such as poverty, addiction, and why our views seem so polarized these days. Chris Arnotti is a reporter for The Guardian newspaper, and I caught up with him when he reached Los Angeles. After all these conversations in towns across the country, Mr. Arnotti is thinking it's not about conservative versus liberal or Fox versus MSNBC, but other forces. Chris, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
You've come up with a very interesting construct here. You don't think it's liberal versus conservative, rural versus urban. It's what?
It's back row versus front row, meaning people with elite educations versus people without them. Currently, in the way our world is structured, I think you have a lot more power and a lot more economic and cultural power when you have that education. So I think it's really divided the world into people who have that and those who don't.
And also it's connected to people who haven't left where they grew up?
Right. People who define themselves by their careers and are willing to move very often versus people who stay in their communities.
And the people who stay in their communities, you think they skew more in support of, for instance, President Trump?
Especially white voters, that's very much the case. If you're white and you've stayed in your community, you generally vote for Trump.
And you stayed in your community. And what accounts for that, do you think? Is it about economic opportunity? Is it about the culture that comes from sticking around where you're from?
It's a little bit of both. I think that there are people who define themselves and define their worldview and define their sense of worth as what they add to their community or what they add to their family or what the family adds to them that takes precedent over perhaps career. Now, there are also people who don't have the opportunity to move, who may have to stay to take care of relatives. But again, it's kind of just a different worldview. It's the idea that this is where I want to be. You know, when I ask people who generally have lived their entire life in the same community why they stayed there, they just kind of look at me like I'm asking an absurd question. They just simply say, well, it's home, as if that wasn't really ever an option.
But what do you mean? I mean, people who have traveled for their careers are no longer anywhere near their hometown, want the best for their family, want the best for their country, probably would agree with the hometown folks on things like, I wish public education were better. I wish bridges weren't crumbling in America.
I think everybody puts their family, you know, cares about their family and cares, wants their children to have a better life than them. But it's kind of how they play that out. Do they go to a new town and form a new family and raise their family there? Or do they stay connected to where they were born and the land that, you know, they remember as a child? That's kind of given them different perspectives on how they think the country should move going forward.
Chris Arnotti is a reporter for The Guardian. Mr. Arnotti, thank you.
Thank you very much.
A real test would be trying to talk politics at, you know, like a high school reunion when the friends who moved away get FaceTime with the folks who stayed near home. Are worldviews aligned or not? I'm interested in hearing from you if this analysis rings true in your life. Tweet us at Marketplace. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.